And welcome back to Coast, Stephen Quayle with us. We're going to talk more about this amazing story of what's hidden deep beneath the Smithsonian in D.C. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back this hour. We'll take your calls with Stephen Quayle. He is the producer of Forbidden History Reveal, the great Smithsonian cover-up. Stephen, I've been to the Smithsonian once when I was much younger with my parents. Fascinating place, but kind of take us on a tour and give us a picture of what the bottom underneath looks like, where you believe all these hidden artifacts and things are.
Well, first of all, George, it's in an area of Virginia. It's a warehouse that looks pretty innocuous from the outside. It's not the Smithsonian in D.C. They only have 1% of the artifacts that the Smithsonian Museum Complex holds in total. It is basically, my source was taken. He stayed at the Cosmos Club. He was taken in the morning to an innocuous warehouse complex. He went down four levels. He had security clearance. He went down to verify that Dr. Pewe, P-E-W-E, the famous geologist who set up the Arizona State University Geology Department, by the way, one of the most famous geologists in the world, when he died, he wanted his brain next to, again, John Wesley Powell. So the family asked the source to go and take a look at it to verify everything. And while he was there, and by the way, this happened 20 years ago, he basically was shown all the different artifacts. He was told of the things that he wasn't shown because we're talking about literally millions of artifacts, but because he had an interest in the Egyptians, because his parents had taken the source to obviously Egypt and also to Paris. He went to the museum, the Louvre, and they saw the Egyptian, the British Museum, all the Egyptian artifacts. He knew what he was seeing. And so he talked about, again, the mummies, my source. He talked about seeing, 100-yard corridors that intersected each floor, and that was just one of the secret warehouses. So the point being, George, up until this time, there's been no eyewitness account. Now, what's problematic to people that deny this, especially the Smithsonian themselves, even in Florida last year, it may have been 18 months ago, they, meaning the Smithsonian, had pitched a giant, almost circus tent, over an area where they're extracting giants. One of my friends who listens to your show was hearing us talk about giants, went up to him and said, oh, you guys are excavating the giants. The gentleman said that the archaeologist who he spoke to, he said he threw down his instruments, I don't know if it was a trowel and a brush, and took off and just mumbled, there are no such things as giants. But he couldn't get away fast enough. Again, imagine that these things are supernatural. Like the 20, and here's something that we put up on Coast to Coast's website, and thank you, Lex. A 21-foot giant was seen by over 300 witnesses in the Montgomery, Alabama area in 1877. But what's interesting about this giant, it's a reptilian-looking thing. It had tusks. It was 21 feet tall. Its eyes were perpendicular, not oval, and the description was so defined that the idea of people, that many witnesses seeing this, and that type of information being hidden, except in the newspaper. By the way, this was on the front page of the newspaper, so if people go to Coast, they'll see it. And also, you'll see a picture of Mark Patrick, the sculptor, standing against his 13-foot-tall giant that the Native Americans, including Buffalo Bill, said were so strong and so fast they could run down buffaloes. It's the same thing that's on the cover.
I just don't guess why they're afraid, Stephen, of revealing some of the information. These would be amazing public discoveries.
Again, George, it's not afraid. It's the Orwellian statement. They who control the past determine the future. They who basically write the history of the future, write it back. Here's the deal. They're going to bring these entities back. When a giant dies, that spirit that was half human, half fallen angel, goes and walks the earth. Jesus talked about that, even the Gadarene demoniac, when the demons are cast out. And by the way, the Catholic Church says they don't have enough exorcists, that the people are waiting in line to get delivered. So the point being, meaning the demons cast out.
Cast out, yeah.
meaning that right now the reason they cover it up is because what does that do to the whole evolution thing? What does that do to civilization? What does that do to the history of the world? And then when people start to demand answers, remember this, we're seeing it in the political arena. Everything now is a lie. Everybody lies. And that's lawlessness when each man does that which is right in his own sight. Our country is divided, but in the scientific community, those who are the initiates, and I've used this term before, ultra-black science are given the true laws of physics, just like we already have the technology, had in 1974, Skunk Works, to travel amongst the stars. Now, people can't believe that. And they have a hard time because we still see the Saturn technology. We see all this stuff, but that's just a ruse. That is, if you will, the Houdini effect on aerospace travel. I quoted Dr. Wernher von Braun. I've referred to Hermann Oberth. These are the two smartest rocket scientists in the world, and they're on record as saying there is a technology that exists that's non-human.
Let's take some calls here for you, Stephen, as they're lining up. Tom's telling me to go to our wild card line first. He won't tell me who it is. So welcome to the program.
Hi, George, Tommy, and Mr. Quill.
It's Jeff doing? From Culver City.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Where have you been?
Oh, I've been on a hiatus. I was down in South America, Central America, just doing my thing.
Do you know how many people thought you had passed on?
Oh, no, I'm alive and kicking. As a matter of fact, my birthday is September 3rd.
All right, well, do your thing, ask your question, and end it with your favorite line.
Okay, great. Yes, Mr. Quill, it's very interesting. Basically, you telling us when you started the show, you mentioned giants, right? I remembered vaguely that the hunt for bin Laden in the caves and the desolate mountains of Afghanistan, supposedly our U.S. soldiers stumbled across some giants in those caves. And you're mentioning that governments other than ours, wanted that DNA from giants to create super soldiers. It's really absolutely mind-boggling. Now, I've been noticing here in Los Angeles alone, Mr. Quill, a strange-looking and curious breed of quote-unquote humans roaming all around L.A., walking around aimlessly, doing nothing all day. And it's kind of reminiscent of that film called They Live, they disappear at night for some reason, But my question is this, Mr. Quill, do you believe that our U.S. government has found or located giants with the DNA that they're searching for or seeking and have created a soulless, hybrid, clone-like, similar to humans, regular humans like ourselves, and they're trying to create these super soldiers some kind of way? And I'll take your answer up there.
That's an interesting question, Stephen.
And absolutely. I devote half of the new DVD, The Egyptian Presence in the Grand Canyon, the Great Smithsonian Cover-Up. That's the reason that one of the main reasons, George, that they're covering this thing up, because they are going to create a hybrid race of beings that's going to be brought back, if you will, from the dead, and those demons are going to inhabit them. So the caller is right on. And by the way, again, I want people to, it's so critical they go to Coast AM and look at the hybrid picture of that 21-foot giant. Imagine that DNA being combined. It seems like every week now we have new artificial muscle that's 200 times the size of humans that we're being promised that will have infinite knowledge. We're being promised that, quote-unquote, we shall be like gods. Well, basically, that's the lie in the Garden of Eden, because not everybody will be like gods. You'll have the guys who are the technocratic elite trillionaires who are telling the rest of the people, the drones that are allowed to live, what to do. So I want to answer. There's two giant incidents in Afghanistan. The Kandahar giant that L.A. Marzulli interviewed. And by the way, I can verify one of the shooters on that, the Kandahar. And then there was a Bagram giant that was taken. And we had, George, on your show, the pilot that flew.
Yes, we did.
By the way, he wrote me a letter saying, Steve, I heard you on Coast to Coast, and I thought you were full of the S word until I flew one out. He talked about the guys in the intelligence field coming on, taking their cell phones, taking their cameras.
How tall was that giant, Steve?
9 to 10 feet, and it weighed 1,500 pounds. It had red hair, and it also, the reason it had red hair, this is important, the giants worldwide seem to have red hair. And I want to make a clarification, George, because I'm getting some emails. It's not the giants that had sex with Earth women producing giants. It was the fallen angels who could, if you will, shapeshift.
The giants were the offspring, right?
The giants were the offspring. So people are saying, well, they'd split the women open. Well, that's what happened when many of the women gave birth to the giants. They died in childbirth. And the thing that's important is it's the fallen angels who can change their size. And I'm not just talking about the reproductive size. I'm talking about their literal physical size, because they seduced the women. And obviously most women aren't going to run up to a giant that's going to split them open if they have
all
a
right,
late
Steve,
night.
Let's pass on that stuff.
You
right?
got it. Okay.
A little bit too graphic for us. To Joe in Monterey, California. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I don't want to be too graphic. Good show, George. Okay, Steve, what are the possibilities of stopping all of these from escalating, or at least getting ready for this war? I know that there are angels and archangels in the light that are at war right now trying to stop all this. But what, as human beings, what can we do to prepare, or at least can we become more spiritual, which gives us an edge?
Is there anything we can do, Steve?
Well, first of all, being aware, you can't go out and fight a war if you don't know who your enemy is, okay, number one. Number two, I mean, there's a war going on. You can see now the war on a global war against Christians. Jesus said that he gives us power as believers to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy. But an active faith is so different than a passive faith. And again, David went up against Goliath, but ultimately it was God that gave the children of Israel the victory over the giants. And the giants spread throughout the world, George, and they started in Sardinia. And what's fascinating is they went to all the corners of the world. And I tell people, you know, when you got a supernatural father and you have supernatural intelligence and you got huge oar strokes or understand other ways of propulsion, crossing the seas is no big deal.
No, not at all. At all. Was, do you think Poseidon was an extraterrestrial or a giant?
I believe that Poseidon was a fallen angel. I believe that Poseidon, and I believe the Greek gods and demigods, there are two terms that people have got to come to grips with, especially those who understand mythology. They've got to come to grips with the difference, okay, between the Olympians, if you will, and the fallen angels, which were the Titans, T-I-T-A-N-S. And so the Titans were what would be the, if you will, the fallen angels. And isn't it interesting that all Greek mythology, you always have Greek mythology, whether it's Zeus or somebody, coming and consorting with Earth women and producing, if you will, Hercules. So the fascination is that when our team was in South America, Tim Alberino got to see some of the chroniclers of the Spanish conquistadors. They were talking about a 36-foot giant. By the way, we have a reproduction of that skull that's going to be in Branson, Missouri, and for the people that are live streaming, they'll see it on video, and that 13-foot giant. And I think we've got a couple other surprises for people, because there's no way to talk about giants, George, when you and I are doing it on the radio, until people can see the size. And as a size comparison on Coast to Coast AM, you can see what a 13-foot giant looks like in relation to the sculptor that sculpted him. And also you can see the 21-foot giant. And for the record, this giant in 1877 had tusks like walrus tusks. And on my sister site called Genesis6Giants.com, in some of the photographs, it shows 21-foot giants in Africa with tusks.
Is it conceivable, Stephen, that the pyramids of Egypt were built by giants, hence those blocks might have been much easier to move?
Well, that is my contention. I actually have that, an artist's sketch of that, too. Plus, they had technology. They had harmonic levitation. And one of the things that's interesting in the reports that I get from soldiers and from scientists who encounter these is the sheer power the mental power, the cranial capacity to levitate. Now, levitate's interesting because you have to offset gravity, and you can see it. Gravity can be offset by an electrical field, and that's how flying saucers are propelled with the electrogravitation. So the point is that we're seeing now this ancient technology coming forth. It's bursting forth. And I'm telling people, look, you may not believe it now, but just put it in your data bank, because you're going to see things that if you understand this, what I'm sharing with you, you won't be terrified or afraid. And I think the previous caller had a tremendously good point. And that's why, George, again, our conference now in Branson is critical. We're dealing with this stuff, transhumanism in the hybrid age, and the whole artificial intelligence, whether it's Vladimir Putin or anybody else of world prominence, and the president of Russia, who they just announced that robot today that looks like a transformer. The point being is they're all saying this, is that the rise of autonomous killing machines or drones or swarm bots or slaughter bots is going to be a whole new battlefield arena. And quite candidly, it's going to be very problematic for people to try and get their brains around it. And that's why, you know, I wrote Humanity on the Brink of Extinction, Terminated. And one of the quotes I think is important. It's on the headstones on the cover. It says, "Here lies the human race who refused to recognize their end when it stared them in the face." And that's what I think is happening right now. We don't fully grasp or understand just what we're up against. AI can be used good, but it will be used for weapons. Everything, all ancient technology, is ultimately seized by the militaries of the world to use as weaponry.
And they can turn. The robots might be able to turn on us, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, they've already had illustrations of that. Even MIT created one that basically was given the qualities of a psychopath. And seriously, the even Sophia has indicated some strange behavior. Here's my statement, whether it's Alexa, Echo, or anything. What people are going to find is that as CERN and other particle high-speed accelerators are starting to take apart the fabric of, or the, if you will, the barrier between the physical and spiritual world, they're going to see things they've never seen before, and it isn't in our best interest. The technocrats have already made the statement they'd like to take the population world down to 500 million, the Georgia Guidestones and other things, all of the different quotes. You've talked about them. We've talked about them together, and I think it's important that people understand what's going on. It starts with the dead scientists. It goes into nano vaccines. It goes into smart dust, where the technological hierarchy literally wants to have a smart record of every plant, every animal, and they're going to number everything. And so right now we're seeing the rise of cryptocurrencies. We're seeing the rise of, if you will, a divorcing from empiric reality going into virtual reality. And we are up against some of the most problematic issues. And I maintain that, I'll quote King Solomon, there's nothing new under the sun. So people who really want to see, and I lay it out. I lay it out where all this stuff of the giants, the Grand Canyon, different places in the world are leading us, and they're leading us to what the first caller was talking about. And they live by, what was the name of the wrestler? Roddy Piper, who was in that movie. There is a gentleman in, I believe, Latin America who has designed an off-polarization pair of glasses that can literally see the sunglasses, see into the spirit world.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Stay with us, Stephen. More to come. Final phone calls next with Stephen Quayle on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Elizabeth Joyce, the psychic, joins us as we talk about psychic attacks and her record of predictions right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final segment with Stephen Quayle. Stephen's website, by the way, is his name, stephenquayle.com, stephenquayle.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, where you can see all the information in his DVDs and books that he has written. Stephen, how many years have we been talking about dead microbiologists now? Almost 15, 16 years.
15 or 16 years, and they keep adding up. And it went from microbiologists to naturopaths, George. And anybody who is...
True.
involved in building the human immune system seems to have been whacked, because somebody obviously doesn't want the body's ability to fight off infection to be increased. They want a weakened population.
Something's going on there, Stephen. There's no question about it. There's a woman by the name of Erin Elizabeth who puts out a magazine that deals with naturopathic people, and she's pretty scared about what's happening to these people.
Well, I quote her in my book, Terminated, and she's done, and by the way, I think she's done a fantastic job, where I was the one that started the dead microbiologist, and you and I talked about that. Erin has done the same thing and done a she's staying up to date on it. And unfortunately, you know, the suicide, quote-unquote, aspect of this couldn't be more phony. And isn't it fascinating that the powers that be just drop these things when there is total sign of foul play? It's truly indicative of something very, very evil going on.
First-time caller Martha in Gulfport, Mississippi is with us now. Hi, Martha.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Thank you so much. Mr. Quayle, my father had bought 3,500 acres up in northwest Arkansas, and he was doing dozer work down in a hollow, and he came across this, I had it in my hand, it looked like a bone coming out of rock, and we took it up to a college up in Missouri, and the man there said it was a pseudo-fossil. Is there such a thing as a pseudo-fossil?
Only with a pseudo-scientist who's part of the, if you will, the establishment to cover this stuff up. I mean, the thing is that mainstream science, and people need to know this too, George, that the DNA labs of the world are tied into the intelligence communities, and when anything comes up that would be, quote-unquote, a pseudo-fossil, they either dismiss it or they take it. And so the thing is, the cover-up, the cover-over, and the what I would call confiscation of true artifacts is still ongoing.
Martha, whatever happened to the bone?
Oh, well, we had it for a long time, and this just breaks my heart because I didn't know. I was just a teenager then. But we had all our antiques and everything stored in a big building. And in there, we had thousands of, we had thousands of artifacts, you know, like cut stones and arrowheads and things.
Sure.
And there was this tremendous fire, and it was so hot, it melted everything, just absolutely destroyed. And then we had it in there, and it destroyed it. And unfortunately, my father just... he ended up drinking himself to death after, you know, years later. I never made a connection, and now it's kind of scary, you know.
That could happen. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, this is indicative, and your father, you know, obviously went to, I would guess, an early grave. But every time this happens, George, there are people that have collected artifacts. And one of the most famous cases was a number of years back where the FBI showed up, put up an entire tent over his house. He had one of the largest collections of ancient artifacts, out-of-place artifacts, and they were taken. They were just simply taken. So the ability for people to publish this stuff, even under the threat of their life. I had a couple in Pennsylvania that found a giant skeleton. They said they told the postmaster, and pretty soon the FBI showed up in hours and told them that if they knew what was good for them, they'd be silent. And that scared people to death. And that really happened. This is not, you know, something just to talk about. It really happened.
Why do I think that somewhere on this planet there's some wealthy person, Stephen, who has a collection that might even surpass the museum?
Well, you're absolutely correct. Klaus Dohna knows people around the world. And by the way, people need to understand some of the most interesting trafficking of pre-Columbian artifacts, just meaning prior to Columbus, and ancient artifacts goes on in the billionaire and there are trillionaire realm. These people trade this stuff because, again, with it comes a basis of gnosis, and that means knowledge. And so they feel very privileged to have what no one else can have. But you couldn't be more correct with that statement, George.
Let's go to Pat in Minneapolis, east of the Rockies. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
Before I ask about the nymphs and the satyrs of ancient Greece, I wanted to say that I think you said Aristophanes instead of Archimedes, because I think it was Archimedes who stuck a stick in the ground on a sunny day and figured out the circumference of the earth to such a close margin. It was scary.
Yeah, you're correct, but I'm not talking about Archimedes. I'm talking about Aristophanes.
He was an ancient dramatist, I think. Like Sophocles, who wrote Oedipus Rex, I think Aristophanes was a dramatist, not a scientist. But anyway,
I beg to differ with you. He was the head of the Alexandrian Museum, the infamous Museum of Alexandria that burned down, and with it all the ancient codexes, etc.
Yeah, the Romans burned down that great library. I'm still mad at them about that. But my question about the satyrs and the nymphs, I used to think that those paintings of those half-men, half-animals was just imaginary, but I'm starting to think that those might have been really accurate representations of some kind of,
creature on the planet.
And then the nymphs, wasn't Hercules the offspring of Zeus, Jupiter? And now I'm thinking the nymphs were probably just women, human women.
Well, what about these half animals, half humans?
Let's deal with satyrs. Let's deal with unicorns. Unicorns and satyrs are both mentioned in the Old Testament. I think unicorns nine times, satyrs or satyrs, some people pronounce them. The idea of transgenic beings. This is what it meant, George, even talks about.
Yep.
The whole earth was corrupt, and why God destroyed it in a universal flood, except for eight souls. And it said Noah wasn't morally perfect, but he was perfect in his generations. And the point that I think is critical is that the Bible, ancient texts also talk about Leviathan. They talk about behemoths. Some people say those are dinosaurs. Obviously, Leviathan, a great sea creature. So the thing is that we're seeing this stuff coming back. And the skeletons, look at how many unusual species now are coming from the depths of the oceans, washing up on the beaches of the ocean. So the point being is all this stuff, in my opinion, was real. It wasn't just somebody, you know, being stoned or microdosing on LSD.
CJ's in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the program, CJ.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing tonight?
Great, sir. Thank you.
If I didn't know, I was going to get through it about a lottery ticket. Anyway, I just really appreciate the fact. I just wanted to, Mr. Norrie, the other night I was going to call when you folks were mentioning some things. I used to work with Roddy Piper. He was one of my best friends, and I don't want to overextend what I did, but I did a lot of different things with him. And we used to joke around about what if we were on a road trip, you know, him and I and like Hulk Hogan and a bunch of us guys, and we got abducted by aliens, and then they're going, well, maybe this was a mistake. But
bring you back.
Yeah, let's get these guys out of here. But Mr. Quayle, I had a question, sir. And I'm not going to mention any names, but some of the guys we worked with, they look like mutants, and that's no offense to them. But, like, how far back do you folks think that you could actually, Andre the Giant, and then we had a couple of, like, Paul White, I guess I said I wasn't going to mention any names, but those guys are great guys, were great guys. But how far do you think that you could actually track, you know, the DNA from these giant guys, because when you meet a guy like that 7'4" and he's 500 pounds and you're going, this guy can't be normal, you know, and they say that they have these different afflictions or whatnot. Is that affliction? Would that affliction that they, I can't recall what they call it, but would that be tied to giant DNA, some of the afflictions that they give to people nowadays that have the giant genetics in them?
Well, you know, obviously there are medical reasons for some of these guys having pituitary or growth hormone issues. But according to the Lawrence Livermore National Lab now, with the bones being able to go back, I think they basically are talking behind the scenes. They can go back, literally thousands of years. Because, again, it's just like 23andMe and some of the ancestry.com. They're being able to type people back to their original people groups. And so this bone, I maintain this, they have the data already, sir, that basically they can prove that it is non-human DNA mixed with human DNA. And there's another disease called acromegaly, which obviously some of the giants die early because their bones don't form. But I don't know, did you see the picture? And, George, did you see the picture
of
the giant baby that was just born in India?
Yeah, huge.
Yeah, and see, that goes to the Book of Ezra, which is one of the basically the pseudepigraphal works, and that means that they don't know who actually wrote it, but it talks about women giving birth to monsters in the end time. Well, that baby was something unusual, so there are too many anomalies coming forth genetically, and plus the whole thing with Montauk and all of the secret experiments. Remember, we're told that, I think Richard Sauder and others have named how many bases there are, but there are 230 bases, and I've literally talked to guys with cosmic clearance and majestic clearance that talk about the transhuman, half-human, half-animal DNA entities that are in cages, and I tell that story and absolutely detail it in the video. So I think the caller's question is really pertinent. What happens? Here's the question. What happens when you contract this stuff back to a non-human species? They used to say that Neanderthals were part of us. And by the way, I don't believe that all of the Paracas skulls that L.A. Marzulli and Brian Forrester and others are finding, that that's head binding. I categorically reject that. Just even based on the fact of the Spanish chroniclers and the size, when you take a rapier 42 inches and put it from the eye socket to the back of the skull, that's not head binding.
No, not at all. Mike in Spencerville, Ohio. Hey, Mike, take it away.
Hey, George, wonderful program tonight.
Thank you, Michael.
What I wanted to ask Steve is, in the Bible it says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be at the coming of the Son of Man. And in Noah's days, people were living to be almost 1,000 years old. Will people again be living to be almost 1,000 years old?
Will we have that kind of longevity again, Stephen?
Absolutely, because now they're finding genetic, if you will, components that basically will stop aging. And I think the oldest man was 969 years old, Methuselah. That's where the statement, older than Methuselah. So one of the things that Zoltan Isfahan, one of the most famous transhumanists, said, at the heart of the matter, transhumanists don't want to die. So they want to live forever. So the thing is, longevity will be brought back, and it will be the promise to the elite and from the elite. If you just toe the line, you live forever.
Stephen, we've only got about 2 minutes left. You are streaming your Branson event?
Yes, sir, we are, and it will be one of the most powerful things. There's probably 10 to 12 hours of streaming. People can go to Gen6, GENSIX.com. It's actually linked on your website, and they can sign up for live streaming. Last year, I think we had people from 65 nations live streaming, and it's one of the most all-encompassing conferences in the world, and it is the biggest conference against transhumanism and hybridization of its kind in the world, so much so that some of the people that are favorable are calling Tom Horn and I the leaders of the transhumanist resistance, and all we are is author researchers telling everybody, you got to be careful. This stuff is not good.
No, not at all. Do we have time for another quick call? Probably not. So, Stephen, what are you working on next?
What I'm working on next is the lost cities of the giants and also the lost Incan cities that we found. But beyond that, we're looking for some astonishing artifacts, George. And beyond that, we're looking for live giants. I sent an advanced team into the Solomon Islands, and all of the interviews that we did lead us to believe that there are still living giants. And again, I encourage everybody to go to your website, Coast to Coast AM, and take a look at that 21-foot giant. He never died. If there's one of them, there's more of them.
How's Stephanie doing in her singing career, Steve?
Stephanie's doing great. We got the privilege of going to the Grand Ole Opry and seeing her in the Circle. And also her new song, which I really like, is called Selfish. And I think she made top 40 country last month, and she's
good
one of the
her.
Most up-and-coming country artists. And, you know, she's as beautiful on the inside as she is on the outside.
She sure
and
is.
I really am grateful to you for the years for talking about her, and she's doing a great job. I told her I was going to be on with you, and she said hi.
It was fun, and it's fun watching her career grow. It really is.
Yep.
Especially from, what, 10 years ago, maybe, when she was starting out doing this. All right, Stephen, be well. Take care. Hope everything's good with the family. We will be back in a moment as we talk with a psychic, Elizabeth Joyce, on Coast to Coast AM.